I want to be courageous. And courage is looking fear in the face and moving forward anyways. And that, even if, you know, like I said, I don't understand how it lasts throughout eternity, but I know that my courage is inspiring my kids to be courageous. And my hope is helping to foster hope in them, and then they will carry this torch that I pass on to them. And I believe, like Dr. King said, that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Welcome to Justice Matters, the podcast inspiring a world where everyone belongs. I'm your host, Tim Buxton. Hey there, everyone. It's Tim here. Welcome to Justice Matters. Today we have on the show David Zach. He is the front man for the band that is called Remedy Drive. They're all the way in the USA. But he is, more importantly, as he would say, he is an advocate and a passionate volunteer for an anti-human trafficking organization called the Exodus Project. He uses his band and has done over the last few years, not only through the albums that he's been writing on counter-trafficking, but also when he tours and performs to draw attention to the incredible work that this organization called the Exodus Project is doing all around the world. Today, more than ever, more humans have been enslaved than any other time in history. Guys, and 70% of them are women and girls that have been exploited in the sex industry. And that is one of the main focuses that we talk about today on the program. And so just a bit of a warning, heads up for those of you who are listening, some very sensitive issues are being talked about. We have this conversation actually on January 11th, which just a short while ago, and it was actually on the National Human Trafficking Awareness Day in the USA. And so for people all over the country, their hearts and minds were drawn attention to this tragic but very important issue that needs to be talked about more than ever. And so without further ado, here is my conversation with David Zach. So thanks, David, for coming on, and I'm so glad we timed it perfectly because...
Yeah, we did.
I don't really, you know, what's going on politically, will there always be stuff going on to talk about, but I don't think there could be anything more important to be talking about than on a day like today than this issue of human trafficking, and you've been a part of that and involved in that for a long time. But your background really is as a musician, frontman for a band, The Remedy Drive. David, thanks for coming on the podcast.
I'm glad to be on it.
Yeah. As I mentioned, there probably isn't a better topic to talk about on a day like today because I think so much of the chatter and noise about political issues, about even COVID, what we don't really understand, I think, enough is underneath the surface there's this heinous industry that is going on and probably getting worse on our watch while we're distracted with all these other things, and how important it is to shine a light on the abuses and the exploitation that are happening to millions and millions of people. The enslavement's happening to millions of people on a daily basis. Can you tell me a bit about the Exodus Project, which you're a part of as their one of their key strategic relationship guys, and a bit about their work, just to kind of frame things as we talk about this topic today?
Yeah. The Exodus Road is a non-government organization. It's been around for 10 years, and I've been volunteering with the Exodus Roads for 7 years now. And our goal is to find and free enslaved people. And there's 40 million people that are impacted by slavery on our watch, like you said. And I agree. I think it's accelerated. I think there's more slavery. There's more creative ways that criminal networks and crime syndicates are taking advantage of vulnerable people, especially in a time when there's so many people displaced from their homes, running from war, running from violence, running from starvation. Yeah. And so we focus on underage sex trafficking of girls and boys. And we are oftentimes just a little bit north of you in Southeast Asia. We work in Latin America, we're in India, and we're here in the United States as well. So we use covert cameras, we use cyber forensics gear, we use technologies that I didn't know existed in the private sector to leverage all of that. And the generosity of my band's fan base, the generosity of people around the world that care about somebody else's daughter, we leverage all that together to partner with law enforcement to find evidence of trafficking. And then we use that evidence to make raids that result in the freedom of these girls and these boys and result in dismantling the criminal networks, that are responsible for this misery. Mm.
David, I've got some really good friends that have been involved in this work, friends over at A21, who you probably aware of as another organization, and a group in Canada called Ally Global. There's the International Justice Mission, I think it's called, IJM. There's so many groups, and quite honestly, there couldn't be enough. And one of the things you mentioned, though, and this kind of is a real, I guess, passion spot for me, is this whole idea of the vulnerability that has escalated because of displacement. I've spent several years living in Iraq, working with displaced people and refugees. And as we look at a day like today, where there is 80 million forcibly displaced from their homes, more than any other time in history, since World War II at least, and we have, but this displacement's only accelerating, which means that more and more people are vulnerable, more and more people are, at this point in time, at risk of being exploited. I don't think there could be enough organizations like yours that you're a part of out there doing the work. Yet it's a very difficult time because resources have never been more stretched thin with what's been going on and the impact of COVID financially. Resources are drying up for those that are vulnerable and victims. What is some of the things that, how is the Exodus Project in this time, a period, how have you been kind of coping with some of the challenges that have been presented because of COVID, because of a lot of the recent increase in war and conflict and issues that have pelted our world lately?
Well, we didn't see everything changing. It was a year ago exactly that I was in Southeast Asia, and we do in-person work mostly. Mm. Right, we're going in to places where we suspect, or we've been told, or we've got a tip, or we have evidence that children are being sold or teenage girls are being sold. And we rely primarily on our local teams. So it is the Thai team running the operations in Thailand. It's the Indian women and men in India that are heading things up. And my role in that as a Westerner is we come in to support their work on a short-term basis usually. Mm. And they need that from us because sex tourism is a real thing. I meet a ton of Australians in those brothels, in those clubs. I meet a lot of Americans and Russians. So there's an industry. So it's normal for a tourist to come into those places. But then when everything closed down, some of the countries we work in are more aggressive with their lockdown. So the brothels are locked down, obviously. So it was an opportunity for our teams to move into cyber work online. And a lot of kids are being sold online and advertised online. So our technology and the training in the technology has been more robust in this last year. So that's a positive. At the same time, I remember a year ago in Latin America, a year ago in Thailand, and especially in Latin America, meeting so many precious Venezuelans that just don't have any options.
Right.
And not just the girls that are being sold. Like, they might cut their hair when they come across the bridge into one of the neighboring countries, and they sell their hair for next to nothing.
Gosh.
And then they have nothing left to sell. And so those issues are tied together. You can't love and care for enslaved people without having that same love and care for displaced people and refugees.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, some 4 million Venezuelans that have been displaced.
I don't know.
Which is a phenomenally, overwhelmingly large amount of people.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, when you're a foreigner in a foreign land, you have nothing, you have no rights. And like you said, the vulnerability just escalates. And I think it's interesting, too, you mentioned how a lot of things moved online. So there's probably been just an escalation in online cyber exploitation of children, women that are confined at home, but that doesn't stop the traffickers from utilizing that means and method of exploitation. Has Exodus Road noticed that kind of impact?
Yeah, and they're going to break the law, so they're going to break. They don't necessarily have to stay home. So they have.
Right.
We have been part of busts recently where there are multiple teenagers being forced to perform sex acts on camera, whether it's a live stream or to create pornography, at the with some sort of fraud or force or coercion. You know, that's how you define sex trafficking. If there's fraud involved, there's force involved. If there's coercion involved. So they're doing that, and they're creative, and they're, you know, traffickers and criminals, they're creative a lot of times because of a desperation, and because they have a quota to fill, or because they have mouths to feed. But then because of our teams is that they are equally creative as well, and they find a way through it. But someone that comes from Venezuela, a lot of times they go all the way through Brazil because it's going to be hard to flee Venezuela and end up in Brazil, but you have to pass through because you don't speak Spanish, right? You speak Portuguese in Brazil. So some of the countries that we're in down there, these people have already had such a long journey to end up thinking they're going to have some sort of employment and end up getting tricked or coerced into prostitution. It's hard. It's hard when she's 15 or 14. And it's hard when my hands are tied too. And everything you want to do, you just want to run with this girl and say, you know, let's escape, but you can't. The goal is to do real impact, to have real systemic change. We got to take down those criminal networks responsible for her misery.
Can you take me back to maybe the first time you were involved? I'd love to hear, obviously, a bit of your background and how you got involved into, you know, counterterrorism work, counter-trafficking,
yeah.
counter-trafficking work. But what I would love to hear, you just kind of alluded to what it's like being inside and wanting to grab a girl's hand and say, let's run. Can you remember the first time that you were thrust into that situation?
The first time I remember that feeling, like it was just so strong, was in 2014. I met Matt Parker from the Exodus Road at the end of 2013. And up until that point, I was a musician. It's still what I do for my day job. And I wanted to recruit my band's community, my fan base, to help pour money into an organization. And I thought I had found one. I'm sitting across the table from a guy that's my age. He's got 3 kids. And he's telling about the work. And I'm like, man, I don't want to just sing about this. Let me go with you. Let me at least see what it is, so I can be informed. And I have some lyric to write. Maybe being over there would inspire some lyric. Man, I had no idea. And so Matt says, you should talk to your wife first. And so I talked to Anna. Anna's like, we're doing this. David's going to join you. This will be our legacy. And so it was only 2 or 3 months after that. I'm in Southeast Asia. You mentioned A21. I was in back in one of the offices that we shared some space with them, in a back room with another organization, seeing like confidential paperwork about ongoing raids with pictures of ongoing investigations, pictures of some of the traffickers, and it was just exciting to me. Like, wow, I'm here. I get to see this firsthand. I get to participate. And then they sent me in, and one of the first missions I was on, I was helping to spot part of a pedophile ring of Westerners that lived, one of them from the United States, that lived in this particular area, but they had some sort of networks that we were trying to identify all the pieces of that network. So my job was just to literally just have a coffee at a place where they knew was frequented by some individuals, and those guys showed up. So I was able to, my job was to text, these guys are here, these guys are leaving. But then because of that, we found out where they lived, and so we were able to stake out those houses as well. Wow. And find out. So we want to build a case against that. Mm-hmm. And that work is exciting work. Like, it's fun to spy on somebody that you know is a criminal, and to know that you're part of helping to take them down. And so that was exciting, everything. But then one night we went on a drive, and they're like, okay, we're going to do something new. We're going out in the jungle, and we're going to go to places where we know they're selling young girls. And we drove through, and it was just all dark. And I looked out the window. I said, hey, I think there's a couple girls standing in front of like that barn. And I was like, oh no, they're too young. And we pulled back, and we said, are the ladies here? You say lady. And they brought us inside, and these girls were like 14 years old. And this one girl's name was June. And I remember it. I was born in June. I remember this moment more than most, because it was the first time where I just felt totally helpless. Like, what are we doing? And so there was negotiation. We had some drinks. They had to go get the beers from down the street. It was just such an odd environment. And, you know, you're talking with the girl, you're using Google Translate on your phone. What's your name? You know? And she says, June. And she says, where are you from? And I say, United States. I said, America. She said, America. And she was just such a tender child. Mm-hmm. And yet she still had the elegance of a woman. She was just wearing a midriff, flip-flops. And we got everything we needed. We got the evidence. These people are selling teenage girls for sex. And we took it up to that point where we said, how much is it going to cost? And then like four motorcycles pulled up, and some rough looking guys came in, and the guy that was leading that, there's like three or four of us. He said, hey, it's time to go. We got up, and I was fumbling, and Thai money's hard because there's the 1,000 baht looks like 100 baht color wise. They're very similar colors. So you can actually spend $30 USD instead of three. And I'm fumbling with the money. I pay my hands. I'm not like Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie. What's it called? The Departed. He's I always have a steady hand. I don't always have a steady hand. And you know, you're processing so much. And I looked back, and we're getting ready to get on back in our vehicle. And I looked back, and I just saw her there for a second. And it's just so wrong. How can I leave that girl there? And I waved goodbye, and leaving, it was hard. There's no way to describe how that feels.
It's like you can never unsee or unknow something. You can go on your life and ignore it, but you'll always have that with you.
William Wilberforce says you can choose to look the other way, but you can never again say you did not know.
There you go.
Something you said, and this is an old song, but I wrote about that moment. I said, if we didn't know, then we wouldn't have to care, would we? But I saw it with my own eyes over there. I breathed the heavy air in the neon streets underneath the stars in the Far East. I caught her eye looking back at me. And tonight I can hear her sing, "Carry Me Home on the Wings of the Dawn." Don't leave me alone. Let me sing a new song. So I wrote that lyric just based on that short split second so we went back. A corrupt cop took a bribe, so we weren't able to rescue June that night, or that next time that our team went in. But then that summer, Several months later, they went back and they rescued June and a couple other girls her age, and that place doesn't exist. Every now and then, when I'm over in that part of the world, I'll drive and see there's still no brothel open there.
Let me tell you about one of our partners, Freedom Broadband. They're an incredible profit-for-purpose business. Freedom Broadband is your all-in-one internet and telephone service provider, whether it's for your business or your home. Now, their internet connection and speeds are simply amazing, and they're in another league when it comes to the quality of their customer service. But here's what really sets them apart. When you switch to any of their services, they'll donate $5 every month to a nonprofit cause of your choice. As the founder of You Belong, an Australian-based nonprofit charity, one of the greatest challenges we face is fundraising. And I think I can speak for almost all leaders in the nonprofit world when I say that being able to have a residual income coming into your accounts to support your work is a dream come true. And like most nonprofits, our work is dependent on the generous support of individuals and groups that share our passion to empower refugees to integrate and thrive here in Australia. What that means is that we spend more time and energy looking for ways to raise support. And what I desperately love to be doing is spending that time and our limited resources developing and growing the many successful programs that we run. But here's where our friends at Freedom Broadband come in. You see, a few months back, I was on a 4G wireless connection at home through one of the largest phone and internet companies here in Australia. And each month I was nervous about going over our usage, getting a nasty bill at the end, and I was working on a lot of the podcasting and videos at home, and the speeds I was getting were just painfully debilitating. And I finally decided to give Freedom Broadband a call. And within 2 minutes, I was on the call with Graham completing my application. And within a week, I had completely switched over to their $79 a month unlimited plan. And I can tell you firsthand, the service has been phenomenal. And I have a direct line to their customer service team whenever I have a question or need assistance. Now the studio and office where I work has switched over to Freedom Broadband as well. We're on their business plan and we haven't looked back. And how cool is this? Little by little, connection by connection, Aussie owned and locally run Freedom Broadband is now actively supporting the great work of nonprofits in communities all around Australia. Simply by switching your internet to Freedom Broadband, you can help transform the lives of those less fortunate. And that's why I love these guys. Get this, head to freedombroadband.com.au and quote Justice Matters on your application form, and they will donate $50 from the activation fee to support Justice Matters. That's going to enable us to continue this podcast and inspire the world where everyone belongs. That's freedombroadband.com.au. Say goodbye to expensive, mediocre internet with poor customer service and hello to top-notch internet service and the good feeling of knowing you're supporting a great cause. Join Freedom Broadband today. Quote Justice Mattis and let's partner together with the internet that's helping to change the world.
So that's exciting.
And it's rare. I mean,
and it's rare.
And that's the sad, that's beautiful, but yeah. All the more to inspire the work to continue. Thanks for sharing that story, David, man.
Yeah.
I know it's not always easy, I don't think, to talk about some of the difficult things, but it's just so important, and I guess it's kind of why I'm so determined to continue on with this podcast and having conversations about very, very difficult, raw things we'd much rather just turn a blind eye to and ignore. So thanks for sharing that story. But it's something that, just like for you, I think there came a point where you're like, I got to get involved in this. This is something that I need to commit my life to. I want to hear a bit about that too, because I think there's people listening I know it's happened to me in my own life, the things I've seen and the experiences I've had in my life that have changed me forever and set me on a course for I'm going to live like this now. Because I think those hearing what happened in your life and the trajectory it's taken you as someone who's, you know, had a good amount of success in the music industry and is going to inspire anybody listening today that, hey, hopefully they listen, something might spark in them. Hey, this is something I've got to do something about and not just hear and say, oh, that's nice and good for them. Tell me about your story. I mean, your band, The Remedy Drive, was doing pretty well. And then you kind of had a moment, I guess, where why don't you tell the story a bit about how things kind of changed and how things, I don't want to spoil it, but can you take it from there, Dave?
So I grew up in Nebraska, which is in the middle of the United States. Never dreamed, when I started playing guitar, playing piano, that my songs would end up on the radio in Australia, in Scotland. I was on an interview with a guy in Scotland today, too. And it's overwhelming to me. Like, I never get used to that. Like, I'm so thankful for that. And I got everything I hoped. I built it, and you know how you're trying to build something. I'm trying to build this thing, and we're being strategic. We're building a team. We have a label, and that's what I thought about. I woke up in the morning and thought, oh, I hope we can keep it pushing it up the hill. You know, mm-hmm. I hope that this single does better than the last one. I hope that this album, and we're all wired that way, right?
Sure.
But then every now and then, something would just completely interrupt that mindset. And one of those things was George W. Bush invited Bono to the prayer breakfast speech, and hearing Bono say to the president of the United States, God is in the slums. He's in the cardboard boxes where the poor play house. He's in the cries heard under the rubble and the debris of war. Wow. He's in the silence of a mother who's infected her daughter with a virus that they'll both die from. And he's with you if you're, he's with us if we're with them. That's where he is. And it was weird. I was like, man, I've never heard anybody talk that way. And it moved something. Mm-hmm. You said ignite a spark. It put oxygen on a spark that already exists.
Yeah.
And that I know already exists in anybody watching or listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about 50 of those moments for me that were just really, really distilled. And another one was Martin Luther King Jr.'s last speech. And he's talking and he says, like anybody, I want to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I just want to do God's will. We as a people will get to the promised land. I might not get there with you. And he says, now is the time for us to develop a kind of dangerous unselfishness. And man, that's just, it grabbed me, grabbed hold of me. What am I doing with my life? And then I thought, maybe I'm going to start using what I love doing, and I'm going to try to do it in the direction of justice and mercy and compassion and freedom. And then it was in 2012, I'm watching that Coney documentary that a lot of people remember, that Invisible Children made this 30-minute, the viral, most watched long-form YouTube video at the time. And it just happened like that. But we had been doing concerts with them on and off, fundraising events. But there's something about that. And I was watching it with my daughter, who was 5 years old at the time. And Ava says, Dad. And it's for people listening that don't know about Coney. Coney is a warlord that would kidnap children and enslave them and force the boys to fight. He displaced millions of people, I think, him somehow.
Well, the World Resistance Army, that he was a part of, has wreaked havoc in the Congo and in several countries in that part of the world,
And the sisters of these boys would be forced to be the child brides of generals. And so there's sex trafficking, there was labor trafficking, there was whatever you call child soldier trafficking, all this different kinds of slavery. And my daughter says, Dad, why not God protect those boys? And combine that with those two other events in my life and all these nudges in that direction that I was experiencing at that time. That's when I started writing the album that led up to me meeting Matt Parker. So he didn't know I was writing this album called Commodity.
Okay.
So I'm a soul. I'm
the,
a soul.
The album
body.
Came first.
Commodity. Yeah.
Wow.
And because that's, I mean, I'm a songwriter. That's what I'm supposed to do, right? I'm supposed to, you know, use what I have because that's the most skill that I have. Mm. Unlike Liam Neeson's character in the movie Taken. And so that's how it all started for me. And then this moment's a convergence, just like these other places. When I was sitting there with Matt, I was like, man, do you realize I'm already writing this stuff? Mm. So I was asking him to go with him, and it just, it happened so naturally and so in such a way that I could never have orchestrated. So for somebody listening, whether it's fighting slavery or something else in the arena of freedom and justice and mercy and compassion, if you take a step forward, if you lean into that sorrow, lean into that fear, and that voice that's nudging you in that direction, I have a confidence that the road will pave itself before you. Right. I believe that with all my heart.
100%. And I've seen that even in my own life, the minute I've decided to take a step in that direction. It's like when you're driving on the road and you might buy a car you've bought, and then suddenly you see all those cars that you've just bought everywhere, and you're like, I thought I was the only one with this car. Suddenly you start seeing them everywhere. It's kind of one of those things where it's like a new lens is open up, and people you meet and opportunities that become available. For you, though, it also kind of changed your whole – you started writing not just one album about it, but you're now onto your – is it your third album, and that's releasing this month?
Yeah.
Imago Amor. Is that Latin for image of love, or I don't know if it's meant to be.
Image of love. If love's Spanish, image of is Latin.
Okay.
I just wanted to, for once, you know, the previous album, The North Star, I wrote based off of Frederick Douglass's abolition newspaper. So I wanted something that if you Googled it, it's going to be the only thing that comes up.
Wow.
Plus, it's a really – I love the idea of looking at someone else and realizing that that person is so intricately and so precisely designed in the image of love. And I'm not even sure exactly what I mean by that. And I'm having a blast trying to learn to talk about it. And this is the front end of learning to talk about it. And, But I know that person that I vehemently disagree with in so many ways. I'm trying to, in my own life, view them as someone who not just has the capacity for love, but is created in love. And that divine spark, I'm trying to look past everything else and try to see straight to that.
Oh,
whether it's a trafficker.
Yeah.
Whether it's a trafficked girl or a refugee or the responsible for refugees running and those responsible for us not being able to help refugees as much as I'd want to, I'm trying to remember that person is, how do I love that person? So that's, for me, that's the practical application of titling it that.
One of the greatest funs I've had this summer holidays, summer here in Australia, is that I've introduced my kids. I've got a 10-year-old daughter and an 8-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter, or almost 7. And I introduced them to the Star Wars kind of series.
Oh,
we started watching them from like, you know, from the Phantom Menace, and we're up to I think The Last Jedi now. And the cool thing is up until this point, they said, my favorite are the middle three, actually, which is interesting. The older ones, they call them. We love those ones. But there's this theme in there that there's still some good in the dark side. There's still some good in Darth Vader. And you should have seen them when Darth Vader finally at the end kind of turned.
Wow.
And there was something inside that ignited my kids, like, yes, like, this isn't just a bad guy, good guy. The bad guy kind of is just the bad guy all the way to the end. Like, there is something good in humanity, even in the worst of us. And I think gosh, I think anyone that just has a good hard look at ourselves and realize, look, what about the guy in the mirror? You know, aren't I in need of mercy? Aren't I in need of compassion, kindness? And somehow I think there's something beautiful to acknowledge that the greatest power in this world is love, and it can win the day if we still believe there's a chance. And it just seems like, I don't know, there's too much hopelessness kind of dominating the airwaves at the moment, at the minute, especially right now. It seems like there's just finger pointing at every other side. I like what you mentioned there about searching for that image of love in all of us, in anybody.
Well, first of all, this is just for you and anybody else. I love it that you went 1 to 9, right? Which I don't know how I'd do it if I had to do it over again. Do you go, you know, would you go 4, 5, 6 like we experienced it, and then go back to 1, 2, 3? But then we just rolled all the way through Mandalorian, but we had watched the Clone Wars, which the Clone Wars are between 3 and 4.
Oh, God. Well, but I missed then there's that.
The Rebels. It's animated, so I wish it was live action. But the storytelling in the Rebels series sets you up for Mandalorian, and you just see that everything is complicated. It's really healing, actually, to watch that stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
You see that there's everything is very complicated and nuanced.
Yes,
and if I put myself in the position of any of those characters, and I do it in real life too, what would I do in real life? If I'm running from conflict, you know, what would I become? Could I become that? And if I say those people, look at those people, I would never, then I've already failed.
Yeah.
Because I need to know that there are not those people. And you said love, like I can imagine somebody listening saying where you said, you know, he said all the cliche lyrics in one sign, you know, all we need is love. Love can win the day, blah, blah, blah. And people like roll their eyes.
Yeah.
But I am convinced of it. And not just this feeling. I'm talking about self-sacrificial, laying down of my rights and my perspective.
Yeah.
And in consideration, selflessly, and sometimes dangerously unselfishly, like Martin Luther King Jr. said, considering what this person's going through. And I'm trying to do that. I'm failing a lot, but I'm trying to do that in a way.
It's kind of hard to avoid the cliches. And I think one of the things even now, especially when we're faced like with this moment, I'm fortunate enough. I actually gladly say this, fortunate enough to hold a U.S. passport as well. I'm married an American. Yeah. And it's really sad, to be honest, and grieving to see what is happening in the US right now. And and the reason I bring that in is because in moments like these, it's easy to lose hope. It's easy to look at the human trafficking statistics and the just be overwhelmed by the situation and the degradation of humanity, to be honest, to think that we could actually get this low as a society and just lose hope. But there, like you said, like you believe it with all your heart that hope will win the day, that love will win the day. And as much as a cliche as it sounds, one of the reasons I've rebranded season 2 of Justice Matters with a yellow kind of color, and I'll do a different color for season 3. But the reason why I chose yellow, and I didn't really know. Realize this till after the fact, kind of like how you're figuring out why it's named Imago Amor, this idea of yellow is like this hope. It's picture of the sunrise. It's bright. It's got this feeling of there is still a new day. The sun's going to come up and there's still opportunity. There's still hope. While I have breath, right, there's still life. There's still hope springs eternal, right, as they say.
Yeah.
And when we look at what's going on, what I want to know, what inspires you? Where does your hope lie? What is it that keeps you going? Hope can sustain us. Hope can keep someone who's like you know, should be dead, stay alive to hopefully see their loved one or their family. Hope. There's a guy named Viktor Frankl who suffered in I think it was in Auschwitz in a concentration camp, and he is the founder of logotherapy, this psychotherapy that's used, and he talked a lot about those that ended up giving up and dying in a concentration camp. It was the lack of hope, lack of meaning, and. So what is it for you that as you confront this tragic industry that still gives you hope?
Well, it was a Russian philosopher that I don't know why I haven't written his name down. I should have it up here. He said something along the lines of this. It's easy to... And I'll just talk me and kind of paraphrase everything he said. But it's easy to look at this trajectory of human history, and think, man, we are just getting beat up and defeated by this great darkness. We're just getting annihilated. Generation after generation falls into the same stupid mistake, starting with a guy hitting his brother with a rock in the head. And I love the movie Noah. This part of it, because there were some weird parts where that rock turned into a dagger, turned into a gun, turned into a,
whoa.
You know, and then back. It was like, and then back, you know, bow and arrow, like a hatchet. Our violence is always pushing our technology forward, and our technology is always pushing our violence forward. And like you said, 80 million people displaced by this that we will not learn, we refuse to learn. And is that the story of human history, or that this great darkness crushing what is human, crushing the image of love in all of us, crushing that divine spark? Or is it the fact that after all these thousands of years, all these thousands of years, this great darkness has failed to crush what is beautiful in us? Mm. It has failed. Darkness has failed. And all I have to do is turn a light on. All I have to do is turn a candle on, and it doesn't even exist, right? Corruption is temporary. It can't last because it's corrupt. All that corruption, all the lies, all the violence, it's temporary. But there is something that is enduring. There's an enduring quality to selfless actions. There's an enduring quality to courage. And I don't know how it works. I'm not a theologian. But there is something about when you or I are brave that's going to echo throughout all eternity. It's going to outlive the very stars. And the fear and the sorrow is real. I know it to be real. It's real. But I want to be courageous. And courage is looking fear in the face and moving forward anyways. And that... Even if, you know, like I said, I don't understand how it lasts throughout eternity, but I know that my courage is inspiring my kids to be courageous. And my hope is helping to foster hope in them, and then they will carry this torch that I pass on to them. And I believe, like Dr. King said, that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And that's why justice matters. We are going to pulled down on that arc with all my weight, with your microphone, with your podcast, with my band, with our selfless action, with our time, with our art, with our moral capital. We're pulling it. And I don't know what it looks like, but I know that darkness will not prevail. I have a confidence that when the light shines in the darkness can't comprehend it. And so that's a long answer to your question. I don't know what it looks like, but I have this confidence. Otherwise, why would we keep on trying? I'm not going to end it in our lifetime. But I don't have a lot of patience for the idea of, hey, this stuff has always been going on. It looks like it's getting worse. why even try? Mm-hmm. What a cynical way to live. I won't live that way. I sound a lot of times. We talk a lot. I'm going to sound kind of jaded or cynical, but my response is, I'm not cynical. I wouldn't be doing this if I was cynical. I wouldn't be trying. I'd give up. I'd join the other team.
And when it comes to the beautiful means of art and music to tell that hopeful story, how has that helped you? Because I would only assume that it has. It isn't in the sense that there's something beautiful. I think there was this guy who tweeted something, and basically it was this idea that love and human beauty is what will save the day, that we can't just give in to big tech and AI. Like, there's something that they cannot do that only the human being, you know, with that divine spark, divine image, can do for this world. That I think is so wonderfully expressed through music, through art, through our creative expressions as human beings. How have you seen that in your own life, your own profession, your own journey?
So we all have that question in the back of our minds. To what extent is AI going to come into my industry?
and it is
going to try to come into the music industry too, right? My son was talking about like algorithms and songwriting algorithms, and they're starting to try to get AI to write songs. But I agree with you. There are some songs, especially songs written. I heard a joke the other day. How are all these pop and country songs going to get written now that there's restrictions on how many people can be in a room together? Because like 10 people on to write one song. And sometimes the song can lose its soul. And I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. So when a song has a soul, it's what makes you cry. That crescendo. When that camera turns just right, and you can tell that the guy behind the camera lens was in tears at that moment, when those actors and felt what they were saying and they became one with the character. There is something transcendent about art in general, but music. I'm so thankful for being able to have music, because you can close your eyes and you can play a song and you can write a lyric or listen to a song, and it's meaningful. The same song, you have it. That same song can be meaningful at different points in your life in different situations. There's something about it that pokes into another reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's another reality, and I don't know what that reality is, but music is one of the most clear ways to me that reminds me there's something more than the skin and bones. I am not merely matter. C.S. Lewis says, you know, thought itself, if we're only material, then thought itself is mere twitching of the gray matter. And they'll be able to teach artificial intelligence to think. But no, there's something, maybe it's so subtle, but there's something that they can never explain that we have. And so for me, when I write a song, when I am coming back from a really traumatic experience with the Exodus Road, trying to put a melody to that experience has been so healing for me. Mm. And one tune that I'm so excited for you to hear with our shared passion is a song that I wrote called Caravan Princess. Mm. And I was in Latin America, and you hear the way some people will talk and try to strip that imago more from that girl that's just running for her life and turn into a threat, turn into an infestation or the dehumanizing language that you hear so often in my country, and I know it happens in your country too. but just remembering she's a precious, majestic caravan princess. Mm. I said, with careless hairs, with fierce eyes. And I wrote that right around the time that that Notre Dame had just caught on fire, and seeing how quickly the international community came together to rightly so repair that building. And yet I'm like, she is a cathedral. She's a temple of Holy Spirit. She's the image of the divine being crushed by wolves on the airwaves and on the borderline. When her pilgrimage is illegal, will you still pour water on her fires? She's a child, as she is medieval, but she never told me your name. She's as young now as she is old. She's Santa Maria. She is Notre Dame. So I don't know why, but just to breathe those words into existence, or at least compile them together, is so helpful to me. And I hope that, especially on, I say that she's crushed by wolves on the airwaves. There's so much negative energy. There's so much demonizing, turning someone that thinks differently or comes from a different walk of life, turning them into the enemy. That it's just out there. It's there. Yeah. I don't know where there is, but it's out there. So I want to put my songs out there too. I want to put these songs as just a glimmer of light in the midst of that sea of hopelessness and despair and pain and hurt and hatred.
Man, I love being able to tell their story, because so much of us are preoccupied with celebrities, with leaders and politicians, yet we don't give enough airtime. We don't realize that the most beautiful, most necessary stories that need to be told are the story of a unknown little girl that no one will ever hear about, and yet through your gift, you're able to give voice to that little girl. I think that is so, that's something that I find so important and so beautiful about the use of music and art to tell these stories, and to bring it back to what Bono said, you know, that's where God is. Is he even in the Notre Dame Cathedral more than he's in the heart and life of that little girl? I dare say he's far more present with her. Again, not to diminish the value that it is the Notre Dame, but it is pales in comparison to her life, and your life and my life.
Did you ever listen or watch the musical Les Miserables?
Oh, like, it was my dad's favorite, and so yeah, and watched every semi-decent film adaptation that there was out there that the Liam Neeson was he in? Was Liam Neeson in one of them? I think he was.
He might have been.
And then the one with Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman that came out. But yeah, totally the story. And it's beautiful.
And Anne Hathaway.
Yes.
When she said, but so I didn't know this at the time. But if I had to point back even earlier in my life, I would say that what prepared me for what Bono said, which prepared me for what Martin Luther King Jr. said, was the way I felt when I listened to those songs. Mm. And when I went through that story. Because the author and once again, I'm forgetting his name, of Les Miserables.
Victor Hugo, right?
Yeah. I think
authored Notre Dame. Yeah, I think.
What's that?
I think, did he also author Notre Dame, the book?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I know that Hugo was a big influence on Dr. King.
Mm.
And what Hugo did for me is before, you know, I saw myself most accurately depicted by the really strict police officer. I think Jean Valjean is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, you know, letter of the law, this person's a criminal or this person's a good person. Mm-hmm. And to see that priest after the guy stole from him and they bring him back and the priest says, he's like, I'm so glad you brought him back. Why didn't you take all this, the candlesticks? Why didn't you take all this other gold? Mm-hmm. It moved me. And then when it was put to music, to love another person is to see the face of God. At the time, I was too young to have any idea what he meant. And that's what I'm starting to realize. To love another person is to see the face of God. And that love is going to be dangerous. You got to put yourself in close proximity with somebody else's sorrow, and you're going to carry that sorrow. You're going to absorb some of their trauma. And that's a good reason not to get involved. That's the best reason not to get involved. Yeah. But for anybody that's worried, like, I don't want to help refugees. I can't help slaves. I couldn't do it. It's going to be too difficult for me. Or I don't like feeding people. I'm going to be too sorrowful. No, you want that. That sorrow is an ingredient that's missing from your life. It's going to bring you a joy that you never dreamed possible. Like, I know that to be true.
Wow, man. I can't help but bring it back to Star Wars and Yoda kind of instructing Luke, who just loses it because he's like tries to kill Kylo Ren, because he sees nothing but darkness in him. And is that the wise one still sees that the answer to addressing this issue, if we are wise, is to make sure that we, to prevent it from happening in the first place means we've got to reach those that are at the very forefront of committing these crimes. We've got to go beyond and go deeper into, these networks. And I know that there's a lot that the Exodus Project is doing and other organizations out there are trying to do, but we cannot lose that sense of hope, even for the worst out there. It's a super good reminder.
Part of loving a trafficker, which my kids heard me on a podcast once, and I said, I love traffickers because I do.
Yeah.
Like, it was hard for me. Let me finish my sentence. Part of loving a trafficker is wanting them to be arrested and break whatever it is that they give them a chance to rehabilitate. Give them a chance to evaluate what they've done, what they're doing. And I was in Latin America, and I watched in real time people that 2 or 3 days before I had been drinking with, I'd been hanging out with, I'd been partying with under the pretense. I tricked them. Our team tricked them. We convinced them that we were what we were pretending to be. And as a result, got an incredible amount of evidence on them. And then I watched their gates get busted in by the police. I saw all this happen, and I didn't feel like I wanted to feel. I didn't feel like, yeah, we got those guys. I felt one of them cried. Mm. He's probably like 25. Mm. Him and I talked about American music, and he had a Statue of Liberty shirt on. And I connected with him on a real personal level, even though I can't stand what he's doing. He was creating synthetic drugs, I think some sort of ecstasy. And so he got in a ton of trouble, and I don't think he realized that he was participating in human trafficking because he just had this kind of network. Mm-hmm. And when he realized it, when I saw him reading the rights and they said that word in Spanish, trata de las chicas, he was shocked, and he was weeping. And it's not what you think it is on any front. And I'm glad I have that softness, I'm hopeful that I remain soft. Cobra Kai is what's kind of doing it for us too. Cobra Kai seems like an allegory for 2020. Really? Like, it's really interesting.
I haven't got into that yet. I think I'm just time poor at the moment, but
we're only on that because we ran out of Rebels episodes.
Man. Well, I know it's getting late over there in Nashville, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk some Star Wars amongst all the other more important things that we've discussed.
Hey, before we go, can I share this with you?
Yeah, sure.
this is something that I wish never had to have happened.
Okay.
But when I first started going over, my youngest daughter was pretty young. And she asked me one night when I was tucking her in, she said, "So Dad, when you're in Thailand, do you use a lightsaber?"
Wow.
So I, just the fact that for a while, this child looked at her dad like a young Anakin Skywalker.
Jedi Knight. Is,
you know, and I had to tell her, no, I don't carry weapons. But since we were talking about Star Wars, I had to interject that before you wrap up.
And what a legacy, right? What a legacy to see your own kids, as you were mentioning, that they've got a passion for this too. And that's, you know, that's the other hope that always is there's a new generation that can see things differently, that it doesn't always have to be the way it was. And, if we give up now, what are we telling our children? What are we telling, those that are looking up to us that think we're the heroes, right? I've got four young children, right? That, think the world of me. Well, my youngest is 2.5 and he still just loves his mama like crazy and was booting me out of bed, came in at 6 in the morning and was like, "Get out of bed, I'm gonna sleep with mama now," you know. He just had none of it. But these kids, they just love us and look up to us and adore us. And thank you for making the sacrifices you've had. I know it's not always popular to make breaks with certain music publishers and other things to do what is right, to do what you're passionate about, even when it's not popular. And all the best for that. So it's coming out, this latest album. Did you want to quickly just kind of let people know what's about to drop?
It's Imago Amor. It's 10 songs. It's a hopeful album. After listening to this podcast, you'll for sure hear where some of the lyric came from, which will be fun. Especially that song Caravan Princess. So wherever you listen to music, it's there.
I listened to Lovely and Dragons. I love Lovely. That was a beautiful tune, and I'm looking forward to when the rest of the songs come out. But that's coming out. And then with the Exodus Project, I think you've got some live event coming up as well at the end of the month in January. So if this drops before then, make sure you go to that as well.
And something that's fun for people to do, I think it works. I don't know. You've been texting me and it works fine. But if you text Remedy to 51555, so it's our band's first name, Remedy, to 51555, you'll get updates about successful raids. So a couple recent ones were like 10 women rescued in India, or five girls rescued in South America, or four boys rescued in Thailand. That was a really exciting one. 4 15-year-old boys we just rescued. So that's really, really exciting to get those texts.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, make sure you guys do that. And David, thanks again for your time, man. It was so good catching up and chatting. And
you too, Tim.
We'll hopefully get to do it again soon. Thanks for listening to this episode of Justice Matters. I'd like to take this time to thank my audio-visual engineer, Jose Biotto, for your help in producing the show. I'd also like to shout out to the Patreon community that financially supports this podcast. Guys, thank you so much for your support. You can join them simply by going to patreon.com/justicematters for a simple donation of $5 a month. You can become a part of the Patreon community and get access to behind-the-scenes content and extras that I share just with you. And lastly, there is another really important way that you can help support the podcast, and that's simply by rating it or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, maybe by subscribing on YouTube. Yes, we are a video podcast as well. Guys, thank you so much for listening in to this episode of Justice Matters. Please come again soon. I can't wait to share more episodes with you. I'm your host, Tim Buxton. Thanks for listening.